Yesterday was Rosh Chodesh Adar. So today we're going to share a remarkable, incredible, beautiful Purim description. We'll do that because that's the end, and we'll begin with the end in mind, the goal, which is to connect with a unique Masorah of generations and help us appreciate and consider how we feel and we connect to Masorah. So let's jump right in to today's letter. And I'm going to share this letter on the screen, and you're going to be a little bit surprised because it's not the letter that you thought we were going to talk about. It's not the letter that went out in the email this morning. We're going to get to that letter in a minute. But this is a different letter, which will help us appreciate the letter we're going to talk about this morning. So on your screen, let's see if you can see it now. You should be able to see a page from a website called Sefaria, which is an awesome Jewish resource. Can you see it on your screen? Sefaria is up there. Excellent. You're seeing a letter that's not written in 1958, that is written in 1173. 1173. This is coined what we call Igeres Taimon, the Yemen letter. Hetika Rabbi Nachum Ma'aravi V'kor Shema Pesach Tikva. He called it Pesach Tikva, having to do with hope. Mini Ano Moshe Rabbi Maimon Hadayan Rabbi Yosef HaChacham Ben Rabbi Yitzchak Harav Bar Ovadia Dayan Zal. This is the text of the epistle of Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Rabbi and Dine of Blessed Memory, in reply to a letter from Rabbi Yaakov of Yemen. Chizkiu yadayim rafos uberkayim koshlus. Strengthen your weak hands and your unsteady knees. Imtzu lechvod gadol v'kadosh mar v'rav Yaakov ha'chachma nechman ha'yakar ha'nechmad v'hanyakar v'hanechbad ben kvod mar v'rav nesan alzal ben alfiyumi. The letter is going to strengthen this honorable rabbi, the Chacham HaNechbad, Yaakov ben Rav Nesanel, ubechlal kol alufyani achenu kol talmide kehilos asher be'eretz timon, yishmereim tzuram v'yogin ba'adam, amen sela. A letter from none other than the Rambam to the Jewish community of Yemen. Why were the Jews of Yemen reaching out to the Rambam? Because they were in a terribly difficult situation. Unfortunately, they were beset by the confluence of anti-Semitic decrees, anti-Jewish persecution from the local Muslim leaders, and the ruminations and the presence of and the controversy over a man who presented himself as Mashiach, which, by the way, during times of persecution, it's not a bad idea. If you're a false Messiah, that's a good time to show up, to tell people, hey, don't worry, it's going to be okay, I'm the Messiah. So there is this terrible pressure from without and pressure from within. And so the leader of the Yemenite Jewish community sends a letter to Egypt, to the Rambam, and the Rambam responds in 1173. Now think about this, by the way, just by the by, how old is the Rambam at this point? Anybody know? Not 43, close, very close. The Rambam was born in 1135. That means he's 38 years old. Mrs. Greenfield, I saw that face. I agree with you. Whoa! Could you imagine? At 38 years old, he is recognized as the world authority in Judaism. So the entire community of Yemen reaches out to him, and he responds. Remember, he's only 38, but he is the Rambam! And he's already become the Rambam by the age of 38. So the Rambam writes them a letter, and we're not going to go through this letter today, although it's certainly a wonderful and interesting limud. The Rambam writes to them a letter about prophecy, about nevuah. He writes about Mashiach, how to determine who is an authentic Messiah, who is a false Messiah. He talks about their suffering. Most of all, he gives them chizuk. He gives them love, concern, compassion, which you got just from that first word. I'll put in the chat for those who are on Zoom this morning. I'm going to put this link in the chat for you so that you can, if you want, you can afterwards or during this year, if you're not, you know, if you're not following along, you could just go on your own and read this Igeres Teiman. It's now in the Zoom if you want to open it up for later. The Rambam's letter gives them chizuk. And this becomes a defining moment. This letter is a defining moment in the future trajectory of the community that we're going to focus on today, the Yemenite community, the Teimanim. Teimanim. And I have to tell you, I have Hakaras HaTov to Dr. Guy Kesar, some of you guys know, a prominent Yemenite member of our community. When I was starting to prepare this shiur, recently I reached out to him and I said, Guy, he's a very passionate member of the Teimani community. I said, I don't know anything about Yehudei Teiman, and I'm going to talk about a particular letter from the most prominent, probably most famous member of the Teimani community, and I need some help. So he says, I have a whole bookshelf full of books, a whole bookshelf full of books. I borrowed one particular one, which we're going to get back to in the end. This community, this Teimani community, is very old. Centuries old. But what's interesting is that even though Yemen and the Teimani community was distinct and they were separate, they were not cut off over many centuries. They were not cut off from the main traditional Jewish community. You know, some of you know that there was a crisis, there was a halachic crisis about how to treat, what to do with certain groups of Ethiopian Jews when they came back. I'm looking on the screen. I see people who probably remember those times. Are these people, are they halachic Jews? Are they not halachic Jews? Did they need to convert? And there was a tremendous uproar in the Olam HaTorah to try to figure out what to do and how to relate to them. Why? Because they had been cut off from the rest of the Jewish world for so many centuries, from the halachic process, from the major principles of development of Torah. Not so for Yemenite Jews. If you want an interesting article on this from Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who traces this just in a brief sketch, I can send it to you later. He published in a New Jersey newspaper not too long ago. He quotes from Tshuvas of the Gaonim. Tshuvas of the Gaonim. So you're talking about more than 1,000 years ago, letters that were exchanged between the rabbinic community in Babylonia, in Bavel, and the Jews in Yemen. And the Rambam in the 12th century is exchanging letters, of course, with them. And so what we have here, on the one hand, is a distinct Jewish community, but one that is not an island. They're not unto themselves. They had a unique set of customs, which we'll reflect on a little bit later. All right, I'll give you just a foreshadowing. This sefer is what I borrowed from Guy. It's called Halichot Teiman. Halicha means to walk, the practices of Teiman. We're going to get back to it in a little bit. All about different minhagim of just one particular corner of Teiman. But in certain ways, it's interesting that their experience, even though it was an Arabic experience, as opposed to for many of us in this room, which was a more Eastern European experience, there were certain commonalities in terms of having great Torah leaders, being devoted to tradition and suffering. In the 17th century, there was something called the Gullus Mauza. I think that's how it's supposed to be pronounced. I'm not 100%, honestly. I don't speak Teimani. Gullus Mauza. Do you know what that meant? It meant that the local Muslim leader drove the entire Jewish community out into a barren desert and left them there. Gullus Mauza, half of the Jewish community of Teiman died in the desert. Could you imagine? You know, Rachmana Litzlan, we think about, and many of us are familiar about, many pogroms and things like this. They had their own forms of pogroms. It was a collective trauma for the entire Yemenite community. When they came back, and this is where things start to get developing in the intellectual culture of Yemen, they came back from this, they rebuilt their community, and there began to be two approaches. There was kind of a split between the followers of two different rabbinic personalities. One was known as the Maharitz, and the other one was known as the Shsile Zaysen. Now, the approaches here differed in a very important way. We mentioned at the outset that the Rambam wrote a letter that became a defining moment for Yemenite Jewry. It was so defining that in the world of Yehudei Teman, they changed the Kaddish. We say, B'chayechon v'yomechon v'chay d'chol b'yis Yisrael. They added a line. I don't know how many of you know this. I didn't know this until I was doing the research. I never davened in a Yemenite shul. Maybe, I don't know if anybody does this today. They say, B'chayechon v'yomechon, right? U'v'chaye d'rabona Moshe ben Maimon. In the life, by the life of the Rambam. The Rambam was so central to the Teimani experience that they changed the nusach of the Kaddish with an honorific for the Rambam, a reference to the Rambam in the Kaddish. B'chaye d'rabona Moshe ben Maimon. So, if you were a follower of the Maharitz, you said that all Yemenite Jews are going to continue to emphasize the centrality of the Rambam in halachic practice. Right? Think about it for a second. For many of us in this group, we're Ashkenazim, so we paskin based on a whole composite of Rishonim, and primarily we are heavily emphasizing the Ashkenazi Rishonim. That's our tradition. That's our Mesorah. So the Rambam gets a lot of weight, obviously. The Rambam, mi godol mi Moshe ad Moshe lo kam kamoshe. Who is like the Rambam? But we have Rashi, we have Tosfos, we have the Rosh, Marami Rutenberg, Mordechai, etc. Oh, if you were living in Teiman, you know, if you were living in Teiman in the 14th century, there was no other person to talk about. It was the Rambam or bust. So, says the Maharitz, we're going to remain totally, exclusively, but primarily and in a dominant way following the Rambam. Not everybody agreed with that. The Shsile Zaysen said, wait a second, we are in many ways similar to this other Sephardic communities in North Africa, in Iberia, in the Arabian areas. So, by the 17th century, who is the dominant figure in the halachic landscape of Sephardic Jews? And not just Sephardic Jews, of course, but who is going to be? Anybody want to take a guess? You can unmute yourself. Who is the dominant force, 17th century, in halachic life, especially for Sephardim? Anybody want to guess? So someone wrote Nachmanides. So the Ramban is living back in the 13th century, also very influential, but not to the same extent in Yemen, not at all. The Rambam is the man. But who else? Who else? Any guesses? Yes, Rav Yosef Karo. I couldn't hear who that was. The Shulchan Aruch. That's right. Thank you, Ronnie. Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shilai Zesim says, look, the Sfardim, they follow Maran, the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, so we should go in that direction also. So there became two movements, which later, when I spoke to Guy, I didn't know anything about this. He said, you know about the Baladim and the Shamim. I said, I don't know anything. I have to do research. I have to learn. This became the kind of two tracks in the Teimani community, known as the Baladi group and the Shami group. The Shami group is more similar to traditional Sephardic approach. Now, by the way, even among Sephardim, we shouldn't oversimplify. You know, for many of us Ashkenazim, I shouldn't speak for anybody else. I see on this group many very educated people. I'm just a regular guy. So what do I know? I was raised in potato kugel and kishka in Eastern Europe. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know the difference between a Moroccan and a Tunisian, but I once had the opportunity to speak to one of the great gems of the Chicago community, Rav Rakach. I don't know how many of you have ever had the opportunity to interact with Rabbi Daniel Raka. Rabbi Raka was explaining to me once the subtlety and the nuances between the Iranian Jews and the Syrian Jews. And right, it's amazing. It's a whole world that many of us are not familiar with. So even we're not going to paint it all with one brush, but generally speaking, the Shamim said, we're going to be more similar to the general Sephardic approach. Whereas the Baladim said, no, no. We are Yemenite. We are Taimanim. That means we are Rambam. We only wear one jersey. It doesn't say Maran on the back. It says Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. That's it. So certain Sfaradim, certain Taimanim, I once made the mistake. I was in shul. I don't want to say who it was. And there was someone who was there. And this person was a Taimani. And there was a question, something about a Sephardic minhag. So I turned around and I said to this person, I said, so what do the Sephardim say? And he looked at me with almost like disgust. He says, I'm not Sephardi. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm just a guy from Galicia. I don't know. I'm so sorry. He was so insulted. He was insulted because the Baladim, they say, we're not Sephardim. We're Yemenite and we follow the Rambam. Oh. And then from this developed another movement, a subgroup of this led, let's say at the beginning of the 20th century by a man by the name of Rabbi I'm totally going to make this, botch this, this name. Rabbi Yichya Kafich. Rabbi Yichya Kafich. He was one of the leaders of a movement called Dor Dea. The words Dor Dea mean the generation of knowledge. Some people derisively call them Dor Daim. This was a group of Baladim. They were associated with Baladim, which emphasized, of course, the Rambam. And the Rambam is focusing on the rational aspects of Yiddishkeit. Not so much, right? In the world of the Rambam, we don't pay a lot of attention at all to Kabbalah or to the Zohar. So there became a movement within this group to make sure to perpetuate and emphasize the Rambam, and not emphasize the role of the Zohar, which became a big controversy. So when I was talking to Guy Kesar, he said, you know, there was a big controversy, but it's not as big a machlokas as people make it out to be. I can't comment on this. I don't know enough about it. But if you're interested in it, you can look more into it. But who is this man? Rav Yechya Kafich. He is the grandfather of the author of the letter that we're focused on today, that went in your email early this morning. The grandfather of the man who we call Rav Yosef Kapach. Just by a quick show of hands, how many people here whose screens are on have ever heard of Rav Kapach? Okay, we got one, maybe two, not very common. Oh, two, three, okay, great. So let's take a moment now to listen to Rav Kapach's own words, and then we're going to introduce him. This is a translation of Rav Kapach's translation of the Rambam. And remember, who is Rav Kapach? He's the grandson of Rav Yachi Kafich. His original name before it was Kapach in Israel was Kafich. Elliot wrote in, he knew his wife, Rabbanit Kapach. Yes, she was famous. I think they are the only couple in the history of the state of Israel that both the husband and the wife earned an Israel prize. He earned it for his scholarship. She earned it for her chesed. That's a whole nother incredible, incredible world. She died, I think, in 2013. He died in 2020. We're going to get to him in a second. But listen to this. Listen to Rav Kapach's own words. This is translated by a man by the name of Michael J. Bonin. When in my youth, I studied the Mishnah Torah with my grandfather of blessed memory. Most people used printed books, each with his own edition. But my grandfather and several of the others had manuscripts which were several hundred years old, each scroll of a different age. The errors and deficiencies of the printed texts were well known. The changes that Maimonides made over time in the commentary on the Mishnah after completing the Mishnah Torah, he then inserted in the Mishnah Torah. These are all found in our manuscripts, but some are not found in the printed texts. The Jews of Yemen are a conservative group. They would never have presumed to, quote, correct or, quote, amend a text that came into their hands, and certainly not the works of the Rambam. However, the Mishnah Torah was subjected to severe editing by the printers and various editors who made emendations of style, language, the structure of sentences, and the division of halachos, to the extent that there is hardly any halacha that has not been amended. In this edition of ours, we are publishing, with God's help, the words of the Rambam in full as we receive them from His blessed hand. Skipping two paragraphs. I was especially motivated by the attachment of my grandfather and father to the ancient manuscripts. They spared no effort or resources to obtain complete and partial manuscripts, even single pages, purchasing them at high prices and paying agents to search through Genizas to find any page or half page from the work of the Rambam. In addition to the searches which they conducted themselves, I have explored many commentaries which have explained the works of the Rambam over generations. You ready for this? And then we're going to change his biography. This is his own words. Before I reached my goal of 300 works, I was still short by about 25. I realized that I was no longer young, and I decided to stop at that point. I hope others will complete the work. If not in my way, then in theirs. I will not hold back photographic copies of the manuscripts in my possession that can be used for editing the books of the Rambam. Rav Kapach said he was on a march, 300 works. Why? Because he's a baladi. Because he is a fierce devotee of the Rambam and of Masorah. Of tradition, of maintaining a fealty to tradition and halachic tradition and manuscripts that need to be passed on over time, because that's what he received from his father, who received it from his father. Rav Kapach was born Yosef Kafich on the 27th of November in 1917 in Sa'ana, or San'a, I don't even know how to pronounce it, in Yemen. His father was Rabbi David Kafich, who died after being attacked by a local Arab. Rav Kapach, little Yosef, was less than 1 year old. And at the age of five, his mother passed away. So here's a five-year-old boy who's totally orphaned, who's now being raised by his grandfather, this famous Rabbi Yechia Kafich, under whom he studied Torah. By the age of 13, Rav Kapach, little Yosef Kapach, had written the entire copy of the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim in Judeo-Arabic. So think about the world in which Rav Kapach is being raised. His grandfather, his father, they are all, as he described in his own words, committed to perpetuating Yemenite tradition and specifically the Rambam. When he was 14, his grandfather died. Like, it's just unbelievable. His grandfather died at 14, and through the whole story, he ended up being married off to an arranged marriage that same year. He worked as a silversmith as a teenager. This man, Rav Kapach, who today, if you say the words Rav Kapach, is known as, you can't say the greatest, but perhaps the most influential editor and rabbinic personality in the world of Rambam studies, of critical editions of all of Rambam texts, and not just Rambam, by the way. He expanded to other Sephardic Rishonim. In 1943, he immigrated to Israel. He studies in Yeshivas Merkaz Harav, and then afterwards in Machon Harry Fishel, where he becomes a dayan. In 1950, he becomes a dayan in the Jerusalem District Court, and he serves together over the next couple of years as a dayan, together with Rav Ovadia Yosef and Rav Lezer Yehuda Waldenberg, the author of the Tzitz Eliezer. If you could see on the screen, I'm going to share it with you. Tell me if you could see. You actually have here now on the screen a psak din. This is a psak din, a protocol signed by the Bezdin Nochichim, who are Rav Ovadia Yosef, Rav Kapach, and Rav Lezer Yehuda Waldenberg. And Rav Ovadia referred to Rav Kapach with tremendous, tremendous respect. Rav Ovadia was the one who encouraged him to be on the Beis Din. And together with Rav Ovadia, there was actually a majority of Sfardim. Think about this, which at that time in Israel was a big Chiddush. There was a majority of Sephardic poskim on this Beis Din. It was Rav Lady Yehuda Waldenberg, that Tzitz Eliezer was Ashkenazi, Rav Kapach, who was Taimani, and Rav Ovadia, who was Lechuel Yosef, who was Sephardic. In 1970, he was appointed as a dayan on the chief rabbinical court in Israel, and he sat together with some of the most famous rabbinic personalities of the 20th century. Who sat with him? People like Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, the father-in-law of Rabbi Menachem B. Sachs of Chicago fame, right? Rav Ovadia, Rav Eliashiv, Rav Avram Shapiro, Mordechai Eliyahu. He was the president of the Yemenite community in Jerusalem until he passed away at the age of 82 on the 21st of July in the year 2000. He's buried, he's laid to rest in Har Menuchos. What a life. You know, I could pull off my shelf here, probably some of you are familiar with this, the Mosad Rav Kook edition of the Pirush HaMishnayos of the Rambam. So this is right off my shelf. You want to learn the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnayos? There's only one place to go if you want a serious edition. You need to look in this edition, Mosad Rav Kook, Rav Kook. Who edited it? Yosef ben Kvod HaRav David Kapach. And dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of more. So now this is all just the introduction, because this just gets us ready for today's letter. Because in 1958, the Halakha David Ben-Gurion, our friend Dave, he wrote the letter to the Chachmei Yisrael. Well, who's he going to write to? He's going to write to Rav Kapach. Because Rav Kapach is not just a Gaon Adir, he's not just a tremendous scholar, he's not just an expert in manuscripts, he represents a whole community. Who does he represent? Yehudei Teiman. And now we're going to appreciate not just what Rav Kapach writes back in his answer, but there's a little twist in Rav Kapach's letter that if you pay attention to it, you'll realize the significance of it in the context of everything that we've just described of Rav Kapach's background and his mission in life. So now we turn our attention to the letter, which you haven't, you know what? Let me pull it up on the screen. So we're at 1958 now. Rav Kapach is a Dayan. And let me make sure I can get it for you here. It's actually a pretty long letter, so I'm not going to put the whole thing up. But now, maybe I'll... Here. Tell me if you could see it now. Can you see the letter on the screen? Yes. Okay, great. So you have it in your email. We're not going to go through the whole letter. I want to focus on a couple of key points. The first section that Rav Kapach addresses, you see, Yosef Kapach, Nachlas Achim Lud, Rechov Lud, Yerushalayim, December 12, 1958. It's a typo, it should say 1958. He's writing back to the Rosh Memshala, and he's so humble. He says the first line here on the screen, Im huanakli tor chacham, if you're going to call me a chacham, I should be meshif la'alacha, but you know, you already know all the Gemaras, you for sure know all the Rambams and the Shulchan Aruchs, I don't have to tell you that. He's so humble. So now, the next paragraph is where I think it's most interesting in Rav Kapach's letter on this point. He says, Aleph, I want to think about Hamunach Yehudi. When we say the word Jew, what does that mean? What is a Jew? And we spoke about this way back a little bit at the beginning of our series, and now Rav Kapach is going to get into it from his perspective. He says, Yesh Lomar, you could say, Ki munach ze eino misamel geza misuyam. You can't say that Jew is a race. He says, it's not nachon. First of all, he says something interesting. Ki, second line, Kidei shelo lechakos es hagazanim. First of all, we shouldn't use that hagdara because we don't want to imitate or be similar to racists of all those people. And therefore, he says, because we don't believe in racism, therefore the Torah, Betoras Yisrael, Ein Gzaim Shonim Ba'olam, third line. Rav Kapach's view is that there are no races in the Torah. Ukedei Lakor Torah Zu, to get rid of this view, Huchcha Torasenu, Laharach Bepirte Pradim Toldos Kaboy Olam, Kedei Layachsam La'avechon Al'emachas. He says, why is it that the Torah takes pains to explain how all of the different nations of the world, the Kafturim and the Kasluchim and the Toldos of Cham and Shem and Yefes, everybody, what they're all about, he says to explicate clearly that there's no such thing as racism, because we all come from one father, one mother. Adam and Chava. We're all in it together. So that's number one. Lakach, maybe, Ula Yoser Loma, maybe you should say better. Can you see my cursor as it moves across the screen to follow? You see it moving there? Does it work? Can you see it? Or no? Yes. Okay. Make it bigger, someone says. Okay, let me try to make it bigger. Hold on. Ho-ho! We did! It works! Okay, now it's bigger. Okay. Maybe we should say, Ula Yoser Nachol Lomar Ki Amunach Yehudi Einu Mesavel Shevet Mesuyam. Maybe you could say that it's a tribe, but that's not exactly. You can't say that Jew means a tribe of people who are the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because Yodim Onur Lolo Safek, we know for sure, Kiba Meshech Kol Adoros throughout all the generations, Nisarvu Behem Rabim Me'amim Hashonim. Many people join the Jewish people over the course of generations. All the way back from the Erev Rav that came out of Egypt, and then the Givonim in the times of Yehoshua, and the times of the Malchei David, etc., etc. That's obviously not limited to the people who are just descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What about all the Gerim? What all the Gerim? So now, parenthetically, he points out that yes, in Chazal there are different views of how to view Gerim, but nonetheless. For sure, there's no question that many people converted to the Jewish people over time. What about, maybe you're going to say, okay, it's not a race. It's definitely not a race. It's not just a tribe, Jews. We're not a tribe. Maybe, kan ein ze munach ha-mesamel yechida geografit misuyemet. Maybe we're just people of a geographic region. That's not true. Look where the people are living. There are Jews in Anglia, England, Berbery, Sin, Tayman, Sfarad, Germania. And even though these are people who are living in all these different places, they all consider themselves Jews. We're all Jews. Of course we're Jews. So now, what are we? Next paragraph. Elomar, you can't say. Yadus, Das. You can't say it's just a religion. Velola and not a nation. Chalila. Chalila, not true. Ain't b'mitzios hamusagim hamukubalim musag shel aravi yehudi o kemoshesh aravi notzri or aravi muslimi or yehudi tzarfati hatoar nispach l'shem. You don't say that somebody. Generally, you don't say this. That somebody is a Jewish English. You would say they're an English Jew. So he says, Hech hizgabesh l'um zeh. He says, rather, there is a national element, there is a l'um, it's gam l'um and gam das. When you say the concept of Jew, you mean somebody who belongs to the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation is one which is shaped by the Jewish religion. That's how he defines Jew. This le'um, this nationality, is misgabesh, not through geography, not through matrilineal, through no tribal affiliation. It's through ayide kabbalas das misuyemes. It's a nation shaped by the acceptance of a religion. Garin ha'uma, the kernel of the nation, who Shevet Mesuyam is a specific tribe, and maybe you could say, Im Tirtze Emor Yotze Yerech Adam Mesuyam, the core of the nation is a group of people who come from one person, Ela Shalkola Mekabel Olav Das Mesuyemes, anyone who accepts a specific religion, Harehu Nasiach Be'erag Ne'erag U'mishtale B'toch Shevet Zeh. You can become woven into the fabric of this people, of this tribe, by this choice. Ad lebeli heker, that nobody will be able to know the difference. Bivchinas ki av hamon goyim nesaticha. And now he quotes one important source. Go three lines later, you see where my cursor is. Vekach kosav harambam. Why is he quoting the Rambam? Because he's Rav Kapach! Because he's a Taimani, because he's a Maladi, of course, because he's going to, of course, quote the Rambam, and he's going to quote the Rambam in a letter. Now, the Rambam, in a letter to Rav Ovadia HaGer, Rav Ovadia HaGer says to, he writes a letter to the Rambam, he says, Helig a Rambam, although he probably didn't say Helig because he didn't speak Yiddish. He says, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, I'm a convert. When I say Shmon Esrei, can I say Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak v'Elokei Yaakov? Can I say that? My forefathers weren't descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So can I say that? Does that work for me? So the Rambam writes back to him, yes, you say that. Avram Avinu is your father also, because Avram is the Av Hamon Goyim. Anybody who converts to the Jewish people is the father of all those who become part of his descendants through conversion. Hichnis bonim rabim tachas kanfei hashchina. So says the Rambam, you too, Rav Ovadia HaGer, you say the regular Nusach HaBracha. This is how the Rambam rules also in his Mishneh Torah. And that's because, says Rav Kapach, the Jewish people are not an exclusive club. Anybody wants to join our Le'um, which is under the contours of this das, of this religion, is welcome to join. He says something really interesting, which I would have never thought. He says in the next paragraph of the letter, he thinks that this is why, interesting, it's a very sensitive topic, this is why, he says, converts can't be kings. He wonders. He says, maybe it's because if somebody converts to Judaism, what might happen is they might retain their connections in their previous culture. And they might want to marry someone from their previous culture. So Rav Kapach says, the Torah is instructing that person that when you convert, you need to marry and find a Jewish woman so that your children will be able to be malachim, that they can be kings and leaders. Because otherwise, you're always going to remain on the periphery. And so what we're trying to do is get people who are committed to further their commitment and their engagement, which I thought was very interesting. I never heard of that as a pshat. Oh. So now, says Rav Kapach, and I'll put it back on the screen. Tell me if you can see it. Now, says Rav Kapach, now that we know what it means, the Musag Jew, okay? So he talks about this point, about Mino Yisrara Me'ata, Ben A'acher, somebody who comes from another nation and who wants to call himself a Jew without going into accepting Giyur Alfi Halacha, without accepting conversion processes. In other words, accepting Kabbalah Sayados Lefi Chukei Hayados, without accepting the title of a Jew, without the parameters and the principles of Jews, how could he be called a Jew? Doesn't make any sense. It's impossible. It's not any different between an adult and a child. And therefore, he says, at the end of the day, Ein lanu azchus la'asosu, we can't make that person a Jew. It's impossible. Koach ha-shaliach adav mikoach ha-mishaleach. So the government can't make that person into a Jew. So it's obvious, he says to Ben-Gurion, there's nothing we could do about this if the person is not halachically Jewish. Then he talks about the idea of sincerity in Os Beis, and then in Os Gimel. He then talks about, in a section Beis, he talks about the practical consequences of this. He says, have the people in the office who are registering these people thought what the consequence would be? And we've alluded to this in previous letters, of taking somebody who is not halachically Jewish, stamping on their registration card Jew, and then they blend into Israeli society. This young, let's say, imagine a young man who after several years finds a nice girl, they start going out, they get serious, they get engaged, they sign up to register to get married, and the civil authorities are not in charge of marriage, the Rabbanut is in charge of marriage. They come to the Rabbanut and they say, we'd like to arrange our wedding date, and they say, I'm sorry, we can't marry you. He says, what do you mean you can't marry you? And the Rabbanut says, oh, you're not Jewish. Says Rav Kapach, could you imagine what kind of emotional destruction would be wrought on this couple? On this young couple? This life could potentially be altered, he says, maybe forever, to be struck like that out of nowhere. It would be shocking and totally devastating to them. How could you do something like that, to set them up like that? You can't do that. Ah. But now we come to the last point that I wanted to share with you. And this is Rav Kapach's, let me put it back on the screen. This is Rav Kapach's mashal, his mashal from the old wise folks of Teman. And now we can understand why Rav Kapach uses this reference. Where is it? Hold on. Let me find it on the screen so we can read it out. Hold on. Oh, we'll get it in English. Let me scroll down. Pardon me one second. Here we go. Can you see it on the screen? In this connection, I'll read it in the English. He says, I'm going to tell you, Ben-Gurion, a story that I heard when I was a kid in Yemen. And in light of everything that we talked about today, why is Rav Kapach telling stories from Yemen? Because that's part of what his mission in life was, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought him here apparently for, was to perpetuate this Masorah. In this connection, I want to recall the story of the Jew who was perplexed about recording his son's age. Shall I, he said, record him younger than he really is? He will be drafted into the army. Shall I register him as older? He will be subject to various taxes and levies. His friend advised him to record the correct age. That, said the Jew, never occurred to me. Never occurred to me. Just say it like it is. He says, Ben-Gurion, you're thinking like this, like that. We just have to call it like it is. It's such a simple story. But what is Rav Kapach doing with that story? He's making a point, but he's drawing on his roots. It's the second time in the letter that he draws on a traditional Yemenite phrase or a pitgam or a story. And that brings us to close with this book, authored by, you see, Yosef Kapach on Halichos Teman. It is a beautiful, beautiful book that goes through, and here is a picture of Rav Kapach as he was a little bit older. It goes through Chaye HaYehudim, the life of Jews, Betzana, in Sana and its area, in that area of Yemen. And he says, I'm careful to tell you that this is not the only way to describe Yemenite Jews. There are other neighborhoods or other areas where they had different minhagim. But it's about perpetuating. Rav Kapach wrote this. He wrote it, and it's incredible. He says he wrote this book collecting all of his memories of the minhagim of Yemen right after he arrived in Israel. Why? Because he felt so alone. So lonely. He said he walked the streets of Tel Aviv and it felt so strange, and he felt estranged. So he wrote down all of his memories from Teman in a book. He didn't publish this for 10 years. More than 10 years passed before he published this. But this is his life. His life is bridging for us a world into the world of Yemenite Jews that otherwise we would not have. So we'll close with a little description that he has here about Purim, as I mentioned at the outside. He describes first how on the afternoon of Erev Purim, the kids would make an effigy. They would make a man that looked like Haman. They would tie it up and they would drag it around and beat it up into shmatas. And then they would go home after Kriyas HaMegillah and have a feast. They have a beautiful break fast. And after that, listen to this interesting minhag. The B'nai Mishpacha, the family members, who in that year had married off their daughter, after they would finish their suda, it was the minig in Sana that they would go to their daughter's house on the night of Purim. And they would bring fruit and sweets and dried fruit and fresh fruit. And they would have a whole plate. It was called Mashrei Zajare. And they would have a little, like a tray made out of copper with three legs, and they would cover it with a beautiful covering. Imagine like a Friday night challah cover. They would put it over this tray, and it was called a tabak. And two of the Kala's friends, or two of her relatives, would carry this tray through the streets to their house. And they would bring this gift to the young couple, and they would sit and they would talk. And after that, they would wish them a happy and a healthy year. What a beautiful minig. Go to your married daughter's house and bring her. I guess, I wonder if it started maybe like a Shalach Monos, but tomorrow it's too busy because we're driving around in West Rogers Park and the one-way streets, and it's so complicated so we don't have time, so we're going to go the night before. I don't know how it started. But Rav Kapach says that was the minig. A window into life. And then he describes how the next morning they would wake up for Shacharis and they would start to give out what they called Matnas Purim. They would give Moz Purim, of course, to the poor, and then they would give Gelt, what we would call in Yiddish, Gelt. In the Ashkenazi world, they called it Moz Purim, to the children who came to Shul. And then I'll close with this last line. He says about the Sudas Purim in Teiman and Sana. He says, Shonei Sudas Purim, we call Sudas HaChagim V'amoadim. The Suda of Purim is different than every other feast. He says it was like a Suda Shlomo. It was like the Suda of Shlomo HaMelech that they saw in the Teimani home. And he says it was a singular day. On that day, they had multiple kinds of beef. Sometimes they also had fish. They had wine. They had arak. And they would specify the different kinds of food for the different families. So something that, let's say, I would get from, I see someone on the screen, maybe Mrs. Greenfield. I would get from Mrs. Greenfield brisket. So then I see the Birnbaums are here. I would send them, you know, caviar. You wouldn't send the same thing that you got from one person to somebody else. Oh, you said it's good. Right? See, this is the minig. The minig is that every, I guess maybe it was so that nobody would think that it was being recycled, Shalach Manos. You know what I'm talking about? The recycling Shalach Manos situation. And mitzvah gedola hi la'adam l'shiyagish al shulchano b'yom zeh dafka mine yayim v'tavshim shikibo miyedidav kimishloach manos. And you know what the practice was? He says that when you would get shalach manos for somebody, you wouldn't toss it out, you wouldn't recycle it for somebody else. The minig was you would put it on your table and you would make sure to eat from a little bit from that shalach manos. And you would pile up all the shalach manos on your table and you would eat a little bit from everybody. When we celebrate Purim this year, obviously it's going to be different. It's going to be Yom Shishi, and it's going to be challenging. And the truth is, I can share Beinenu that I'm not going to have the opportunity to greet all of you this year as usual, because Mirtz Hashem, our family, is going to be